This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
What I'm going to talk about today is a little bit of how to question the new thing and see what it really is going to do for our patients in to change the nature of healthcare. So I'm going to start out. Justin, you can tell me if anybody's got their hand up in the other places. How many of you out there own a Tesla now? How many of you think you'd like to if you could afford it? Yeah, it's pretty exciting. And it's sort of interesting when you look at the model and you think about, I always now when I look at like ads like this, I think about healthcare, like how many of our patients are requesting a callback? And I bet Tesla calls back a lot faster. And a lot of them, unfortunately, are applying for financing. A lot of them, even if they have insurance, still have tremendous burdens for their family. But as I, in just a few minutes, I'm going to compare this to a different kind of car, the self-drive car. Have any of you seen this on the road? The Google self-drive car? You know, it's legal in California. My brother is a little bit kooky. He saw one on the road and he went up sort of to the side of it and started edging over to see what would happen. And the car, sure enough, it dropped back very courteously, let him have his way. So keep in the back of your mind, between Tesla and the self-drive car, what's the analogy and what would we think of what that might do in healthcare? So let's go ahead. What I'm going to talk about, first of all, is a little bit about sort of my concept of what innovation is and how we set up the Innovation Institute here. I want to make a few remarks about the history of pediatrics and innovation and quickly go through what we've been doing at UCLA and the Institute for Innovation. Talk specifically, again, about complex chronic disease, which is what so many of you spend your time on. And talk about the ways in which growing out of what you're doing now, there could be a vision of pediatric innovation for Southern California. So here's just a few examples of some of the innovations that we've been a part of or responsible for introducing here. The top right life image, some of you may have used in the emergency department. This is a cloud-based management of images. So anywhere in the world, another provider or imaging center can upload images and they can be looked at in the cloud with reading quality and then the decision made whether to import them into our PACS system if we take a case. Many of you may know the UCLA care coordinators that Sam Skutsky and the FPG started in adult internal family and family medicine geriatrics. But this is very different from traditional care coordinators on the East Coast and the models that had gotten most of the attention because those use nurse practitioners and nurses. And our model does use non-licensed personnel, non-clinically licensed. So they are returned Army vets, social workers, people who don't have a clinical license. And we have been showing tremendous effects from this. It has reduced readmissions. It's reduced hospital admissions. It's reduced ED visits. And so it's really proven to be very effective. Zipnosis is an innovation that we're just starting. And this is a company that does completely online diagnosis and treatment of minor acute illness. So you can go online, enter all your symptoms, and get an online diagnosis and a prescription, if needed, for your illness. And this is very controversial because the state medical boards association around the country has come out with a statement that they don't think anything like this should happen unless you have a video eyesight from the, so it's really a replication in a telemedicine sense of the physician interviewing the patient. And so we're going to be doing some studies of this, and the University of Alabama is as well. But there's a lot of reason to think that this may be a very interesting route for minor acute illnesses. And augmetics is a very interesting thing. Have any of you seen, anyone have a Google Glass device? They just came out last fall. Well, this is a very interesting young company that basically uses the Google Glass for remote transcribing of the patient encounter. So instead of the physician or nurse practitioner having to do the documentation, imagine you're coming out of one patient room and you're about to go down to the next patient's room. And instead of going to your office and logging in or into the next patient's room and logging in and reading through their history, you push the side of your glass and your personal transcriber who's in the electronic health record in Care Connect for you is basically saying, hello, good morning, Dr. Green. And you say, okay, I think my next patient is Samantha Jones. And your transcriber basically says yes and shows you on the inside of the Google Glass, it's very easy to read, shows you the problem list, the meds list, the labs, anything, the images, anything you want to see while you're just standing there. And then you say, okay, and the purpose of the visit, and they read back to you what's in the notes, and you go into the room. And as you're doing the patient history and physical, they are transcribing it. They're entering everything into the electronic health record, so you will not have to do this. And the satisfaction rate so far, 95% of the patients accept this and like it. So it's a very interesting way to eliminate all the documentation challenges. So these are some of the kinds of innovations that we're working on. So what do we mean then? These are good examples to start talking about this. What do we mean by innovations? A lot of people for a long time have thought of innovation as inventing a gizmo, like Alexander Graham Bell inventing the telephone. And for us, it might be a medical device or a new imaging system. You can also look at it as redesigning the process of production. That means the way you do your work. And you can think about Henry Ford. When he did the Model A and Model T, there already were cars just that good out on the road. He didn't invent anything much about the car. What he invented was the assembly line in order to standardize the production of the car. And he led the development of the car dealerships around the country, which was a way of organizing the sales and distribution and financing. So this was not inventing a gizmo. This was inventing a new way to do the work and a new way to have access to your products for the consumer. But I think there's even a third version, which is to completely disrupt an industry by changing, because in a sense what Henry Ford did was standardize and facilitate what had been happening before. People, you know, put the drive chain together and they put the engine in. They did all those steps. He just made it standardized and was able to judge the quality and do it faster. But when you think about the Google self-drive car, the Google self-drive car introduces something that nobody had ever seen before, which is you don't have to drive the car. In theory, you don't have to be in the car. What industry do you think this will disrupt most?
Parking enforcement.
What, parking enforcement? Yeah. Well, they can still cite the license plate. I would suggest that what it's really going to disrupt is the trucking industry. Because if you can, a lot of the cost of trucking is the labor. Long haul drives, you got to have at least one person and sometimes two. If you can have no human being on the truck, it's going to really change the ability to keep going. You don't have to stop and sleep at any point. So this is an example of a very disruptive technology. And I would argue that what we need in the future in the United States is more like the self-drive car. that we need to have systems that help patients keep themselves healthy or recover health with much less dependence on contact with highly paid health professionals. So that's a sort of starting assumption in this. So we will be talking then about creating future core competencies in patient-centered innovation and affordable care. Those are the two driving central needs in the healthcare system, I believe, today. This is, if you think of the UCLA strategies, we're working, meaning the clinical leadership and the executive team, across primary care, secondary strategy and affiliations, tertiary and quaternary care, affiliations and partnerships, and insurance partnerships. And as we sat with the leadership in the first 6 months or 9 months that we were working on developing the Innovation Institute, we were asking, how could we boil this down so that we're not doing one-off projects, that we're actually working in a concerted fashion? And it emerged that the four topics that were common and cut across almost all of these was providing better patient access. Second one is population health, and that's a question of how can we leverage our current resources to care for a much larger population? How can we think in terms of all of California or Southern California or three or four counties? And what is the population need for good health and good health care? And how can we play a larger role than we do as the Northwest corner, where essentially in the LA market, UCLA, even though we're, you know, in the top five nationally and all, we only represent less than 5% of the market because it's a very fragmented market. So the question is, how can we leverage what we have here to affect a larger number of people? The third thing is that we are an academic center. Our lifeblood is the flow of tertiary and quaternary patients, hopefully in the future not so much here physically to us, but the fact that we co-manage or consult on a very large number of the kind of cases that we want either for new research and learning or for training purposes. So the last thing I'll talk about at the very end is the global lab, because we believe that we need to start reaching out internationally, not just to export things that we've developed as research, but to learn new approaches that we can use for each of these other three purposes. So very quickly, by now, this is only 5 years old, but we were the first ones to do an innovation life cycle. And basically, it's trying to help people understand, well, it's one thing to just see a new idea. What do you actually do with it? And so there's three stages. In identifying innovations, what we're looking for are new ideas, but we want ideas that have actually been carried out through the pilot stage and preferably been adopted a couple of other places so we know it could work. Because if you start with just the concept, how many years does it usually take you to get to the point of full demonstration that a concept is valid? What's your guess? 3, 4, 5 years usually. And there are a lot of good inventions out there already existing. And if we can bring the ones in-house that we think are valuable and stand them up and give them a UCLA twist, that is a much faster way of moving forward. We can't help ourselves. We keep inventing all the time. We're not going to stop doing that. But it is a much more agnostic approach to being willing to bring in inventions from other places. And you notice I'm using the word invention, because I want to differentiate. Some of you may have heard other talks that I've given differentiating invention from innovation. Because the economists and business people talk about innovation as taking something to scale so that it matters. So if you do something for the first time, prove that it's effective, and publish it in a journal, The Institute of Medicine says it's about 17 years usually to get to the point where it's widely accepted. So the question of innovation is, how do you actually make it affect a large number of patients pretty rapidly? So we identify new inventions that can become innovations because we can do it, first of all, large scale within UCLA and then promote its use externally. And then we work with pediatrics or whatever the department or division is to pilot it, make sure it's working well here, put whatever UCLA twist on it we need, and then deploy it full scale. In primary care innovation model that the FPG led, this process was so highly organized that the pilot cycle was 6 months for five clinics to really completely revamp major aspects of how they did care, and then 6 months more, another nine clinics. And in 2 years, almost all the primary care clinics in adult medicine will have this new system in place. So it's also very important that it's not just one-off, like, oh, this particular clinic does it. If it's the best practice, let's get it to every place in our clinics. And so this will be available to you, obviously, to go back and look at. I'm not going to talk my way through all of these, but it's a partial listing of the initiatives that we've either led or collaborated with. And it's been a terrific experience. They say that if you do innovation, you're supposed to fail. You know, that if you're not failing about a quarter or a third of the time, you probably aren't really trying disruptive enough ideas. Well, by those standards, I'd say we're doing very well, because we definitely have some failures. One of the biggest failures is something that doesn't yet really exist in pediatric medicine, only in adult medicine, and that's the tele-ICU. And tele-ICU, E-ICU, does not mean, in this case, the ability to have remote audiovisual into another ICU. Obviously, we've been doing that. Davis has done that many other places. But there are systems in adult medicine that use algorithms and have feeds of all the monitors and all the electronic health record from remote hospitals where intensivists in the hub co-manage those patients or even at night shifts completely manage those patients with the critical care nurses on site. Today, 19% of adult ICU beds are managed that way with the EICU system. And I believe some of you here may know more recently than what I know, but I believe that Cincinnati Children's and Boston Children's are collaborating with Philips on the development of an EICU for pediatric cases. And I would suggest that it would be, from a strategic point of view, great if you all got involved in the early stages of something like that, because when we talk about the ability to improve the health of a much larger population out there, part of that is the idea of being able to co-manage cases and to leverage your specialist time. Because as long as you do, think about this, as long as you have an intensivist here working with another hospital with just remote audiovisual, you are solving a geographic problem, but you're not leveraging the clinician's time at all. When you use the tele-ICU, an individual intensivist and two critical care nurses can cover about 100 ICU beds with better outcomes by about 20% lower mortality, lower costs, lower length of stay. So it's really a very major kind of innovation, and I think it would be something, if there are intensivists among you who would be interested, to be involved in something very exciting. So this is the process we've been using at UCLA, and we worked on it first, as I said, with primary care innovation model, and it has been a way of spreading out through the rest of the clinics what we're doing. I hope that in the future that, for example, in the case of pediatrics, as you achieve an innovation like the healthy weight innovation that you're doing remotely now into a number of sites, what if we looked at what are all the school systems and all the clinics in just LA County? What's the process it would take us 2 to 3 years to get that to reach every one of them? That's the issue of taking something that's an absolutely stellar innovation and has won some awards both through our Innovation Institute and through other organizations and getting it to scale in a really big way. So this is how we measure our satisfaction. These are just some examples. One of the ways is our system and culture, and that's so far kind of hard to measure. We have to basically ask the executive team, do they feel like things are moving through faster of the innovations? But scanning is how many new inventions are introduced and how many strategic innovations. We've now evaluated about 100 innovations externally to bring in. We haven't brought all of them in, obviously. But as you go down the list, you can see that the number of new patients we attract for the resources we expend, the savings in terms of impact on cost of care, all of those are some of the ways different innovations are measured. And these are our innovation officers. Part of our work on culture here at UCLA is to try and develop nodes of innovation within each department or division. And so Justin Stevens, who I'm sure many of you know, is the innovation officer representing both pediatrics and the work on telemedicine at UCLA. And we have been having meetings with different departments and divisions to talk more concretely about innovations you already have underway and ones you might be interested in. And working with Justin, we'd be delighted to do that with you as well if you're interested. Sometimes we bring in some outside companies that want to learn from us. So we just had a great meeting of the nursing leadership with Mitsui Chemicals, believe it or not. Mitsui Chemicals is interested in going into healthcare, and they wanted to learn about what the needs would be and what innovations UCLA has, and they got very excited about that. So I said that I wanted to mention briefly about pediatrics as the font of innovations in health. I was a health commissioner in New Jersey from 1986 to 1990, and that was in the height of the first wave of the HIV epidemic on the East Coast, where it was more of a mix of substance abuse, needle transmission, and sexual transmission. And we very clearly, when we looked at this huge number of new patients with complex needs, the model we went to were Children's Special Services. Because Children's Special Services had an entirely organized way of case management. And they had, although we didn't use the word so much then, but they had protocols, they had best practices, they had associations where people exchanged the way they were doing their work, and that became the model around the country for the development of the HIV response in terms of care delivery. It also, as you know, the development of tiered hospital systems for NICUs became a model for lots of other kinds of tiering for other severe diseases. NICU is exactly a disease, but you get what I'm saying. Secondly, the regional collaboration on telemedicine. So what Davis has done and what we're starting to do here, and we have some, the echocardiography and other services that have been doing telemedicine for a long time, but some of them are newer. And as I said, the biggest recommendation that we would have from the Innovation Institute is let's sit down and map out a strategy that would say what part of the need for the population in LA County or Southern California could we meet if we really ran a service that did this rather than just the amount of time that one or two faculty and their support staff have to devote to it. Because if you've developed something really good, more people should have access to it than can be provided with our current structure and capability. And then most recently, it's really terrific that you all got in the consortium with a number of other centers around the country, but with UCLA as clear lead and developer, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation Challenge grant. It was $28 million or something like that, which is just terrific. And the thing that I hope we could work into that is how could that, now that I know you've been doing the work on developing the residency curriculum around it and a lot of the protocols and the systems for it, how can we make that available through to a larger population through extension, through telehealth? So those are the kinds of questions that I think will be really interesting. Have any of your specialties used the patient voice toolkit that you know of? This is only about a year old, so they may not have heard about it, but you can go, I'll show you, you can go onto our website within the UCLA website and learn about it. This is essentially medical ethnography. It comes out of anthropology, and it was done in other consumer services before healthcare. And the last 4 or 5 years, it's been developed in healthcare. And usually what you have for patient input in most hospital systems or clinics is a patient representative on a planning committee or a patient council. And those are very good and very important to have and play a good role. But it doesn't always mean that you get a really deep understanding of how you need to completely redesign your work. And so patient voice is a toolkit because it's pretty expensive if you hire one of these consulting groups that specializes in it, and they come in and take you through this just for one service. It could be $100,000. So what we did is we had them come in and go through it with urology, and we supported it and tracked it and managed it. And at the end of it, working with Frog Design, which is the medical ethnography group we worked with, we developed this toolkit. So now it's being used for the Surgical Medical Home Project and starting to be used for several others, where you just take, it's a fairly short, 2 or 3 days, and you go into the homes of the patients and you video record interviews with them. And you do that for maybe 10 patients or 20, depending how many you want to include. And then you interview the subject matter experts, the nurses, the physicians, all of the ancillary services. And you boil that down and you map the process. So here it's mapping to define the phases of care. And you can see this baseline here represents where a patient feels okay, neutral, all right, nothing special. If it goes above here, it means they feel confidence and trust. They feel they know how to manage their life and their disease. They trust the healthcare system. If it's below, then they're worried and scared. They're not sure who to call. They feel uninformed. And so we mapped that. And as we boiled down all of these interviews and showed clips of it, you hold a day or a half day long meeting of all of the people in that particular program. So all of the urologists and the support staff came together and they looked at all of this. And it really was a revelation. Some things they said, oh, yeah, we knew that was a problem. But there were a lot of new learnings. And one of the funniest ones, I thought it was pretty amazing, that some of the urologists were dumbstruck to find out that some of their patients had trouble managing catheters. You would have thought that would be the first thing that they would know. But it was a big problem for the patients. So when you have an opportunity to take a group of patients in a particular service or a particular specialty and do this kind of process, we have the toolkit, we can assist you with doing it, but it can help you really redesign a process of care. This is just an example from the urology case with medication for a patient and going to the home to do the video interview. And then here's the iPad where you can communicate with the patient afterwards as well. But the patients were really excited to have this opportunity to have the input, and it was a very worthwhile process. And as you can see, you know, a lot of these points are above the line. There were a lot of parts of the process that patients liked, but there were a lot of ones that weren't. So home care instructions, discharge, plan for the day of surgery, decision makers, all of these different things. Like, they don't know who's really making the decision in this case. So it really helps you understand how you have to redesign care in order to better meet the needs of the patients. And what it does, of course, also is force the clinicians to begin standardizing their responses, and the clinic administrators and the floor ancillary staff to begin organizing all of their work so they do it in a more standardized way. So as you narrow variation and you lift the average, you're getting a better quality result as well. So this is on the website. If you just go to UCLAinnovates.org, it's the Patient Voice Toolkit, if you're interested in looking at more of a description of it. There are quite a number of telemedicine efforts that you already have underway. And if we took the key strategy initiatives at UCLA and laid them over some of those telemedicine initiatives and just thought about pain and comfort care and the healthy weight clinic and thought about what would a strategy be to be able to provide this service for a fourth or a third or a half of all of the children and families that need it. That's the kind of exciting dream or vision of bringing something to scale where we make a huge difference, not just in the lives of patients who make it here as our individual patients, but using telehealth and telemedicine and collaborative relationships with other organizations to reach beyond. One of the other things we've done in that regard is we have done a scan of innovations in Los Angeles. And this was principally, some are pediatric, but principally turned out to be adult medicine. But you could do an equivalent thing in pediatrics. And we found 20 innovations that were really fabulous, things that we have members in an LA Innovators Forum where people come from all around LA County, members of different health systems or clinics or hospitals come to these meetings. And so with their help, we did this scan. And then we at MLK in June, we had a gallery day and we presented the results. And Dr. Feinberg came and several other people from UCLA. And everybody left with two or three things that they wanted to borrow from another house or another hospital or another health system. So another possibility is to think about doing a scan for innovations in pediatric practice in the two or three county region and then have a gallery day for everybody to present. I mean, the key thing there is you have to really be interested in learning from everybody else and generous about sharing all the information about what we do. But I think that's less of a challenge in pediatrics than it is in most other areas. And for example, from the UCLA scan, three of the things that we picked up, one is a new development, which is a new form of emergent care that's in between urgent care and an emergency room. So it takes care of everything except life-threatening illnesses. So broken bones, a lot of the things that in adult medicine, the extended treatment center that Department of Medicine has set up does. But it does this at taking out 60% of the cost. So families have shorter wait times, and the care is much more convenient than in an emergency room, and it's much lower cost. So that's one of the things, and you might think about, is there any sort of piggybacking in terms of pediatrics that might be interesting? The second one is the home-based palliative care, which Partners in Care Foundation here in Los Angeles developed with Kaiser and saves 38% of costs in the last year of life for adult patients and is now being spread throughout Kaiser nationally. And again, I think it would be really interesting to get together with Partners in Care Foundation and look at our palliative care programs in pediatrics and how it may be that actually we're already doing almost everything that they do for adults, but it would be interesting to go through the checklist and see whether there are things we could add. And then there's the e-consult, e-referral program, which we developed here and had some trouble getting traction. This is basically the idea of having protected, templated email, so a primary care physician or a referring specialist in the community could email with our specialist back and forth, and in about half the cases, the primary care or referring specialist can resolve the question without having to send the patient to the specialist physically. And this has been adopted in a very big scale at Mayo. They've done over 80,000 e-referrals. And it, in the last year and a half, has been adopted at LA, at the county health in LA. It was LA Care, the Medi-Cal managed care group funded a pilot, and it was successful. So the county picked it up. And the county is now requiring that all specialist referrals in what represents about now 85% of all their specialty consults go through an e-referral system. And it's cut their wait times in some specialties from 7 months down to a week or two, because you clear out so many of the cases that can be handled with essentially a curbside consultation done electronically. We also, as many of you know, have had contests, and pediatrics have been enthusiastic participants and also winners. The most recent one was on re-imaging and transforming the patient experience. And we had, there were 50 applications, and 20% of the entire UCLA Health staff and employees voted, which was amazing. We were absolutely overwhelmed. It was very, very exciting. And so even though we awarded funding to five of them, there are about 15 of them that are actually starting to get traction, because by bringing them to light, other sources of funding or other ways of doing them were found. So we're really excited about that. And we're going to be keeping running the contest. So if you have ideas about that for future themes for the contest, we'd love to hear from you about it. And then the very last thing is the Global Lab. And I told you that we had started an effort to look around the country and around the world for innovations that we could import and a platform that we could use to export the innovations that we come up with here. And we thought it was important, looking at the future finances of healthcare in the U.S., to make sure we found things that improved access to care by reducing cost. So we were looking for the innovations that leveraged our resources that would allow you to care for more people with less money. And so that was the theme that we used. And we did a pilot scan, and you can go on our website, UCLAinnovates.org, and click on the Global Lab, and you'll see the results of that. And we found, we were looking in the literature and business press, and then crowdsourcing from publicly available information about the investors and the companies. Because our question was, well, if you set out to look for innovations that really save money, are they out there? Are there a lot of them? And we went through about 600 or 700 of them, and about 5% of them were substantially cost-saving. So they are there, not a huge number compared to quality improvement innovations. And we wanted documented evidence of meaningful savings. And we were also looking at the impact on experience, engagement, and access and outcomes. And we had lots of partners. We got Robert Wood Johnson Foundation funding, Commonwealth Fund funding, and worked with University Hospital Consortium and the Innovation Learning Network, which are 40 large health systems around the country working together. So it was a pretty big project. And you can go online to the website and read about more of the innovations. But we grouped them into ones where you actually could save 20% or more, so save a fifth of the cost of care. And those that got 2% or more savings, because even that with a big population is definitely, as Everett Dirksen would have said, real money. So level one savings are nurse extender clinical aides. That's the grand aides program. We invited Tim Garson from University of Virginia to come here and give a talk. It's used in pediatric medicine, in Medicaid populations in Texas and a number of other places with huge savings. And so these are community health workers who are trained in a rigorous curriculum and supervised by a nurse. So they don't do clinical decision making at all, but they're a nurse extender and highly impactful, really quite impressive. Ethnographically designed patient self-management kits. This was amazing. We didn't know about this. We hadn't heard about this. And it's essentially that same medical ethnography approach to design discharge kits for patient education for patients after they return home. It costs like a couple hundred dollars with complete audio, visual, and everything else. And it was saving a huge amount. They were getting 50, 60% savings looking at emergency room visits and rehospitalizations. So I think there's some interesting work to be done there looking at pediatric discharge kits and education and what we could do with that. And we have a platform that Justin knows very well and could work with you on called Vivify for reaching into the home with more complex capabilities in the home for doing the education and the remote monitoring and support. So if others of you are interested, that would be something interesting to follow up on. So it gives you an idea of what these were like, and there are descriptions of them, profiles online of each of those, so you can read about them, how they work, who were the innovators, how complex it is. There's several pages of this kind of information. How did they get the savings? Did it increase access? What was the effect on patient experience or engagement and on outcomes? And then a table listing the first set of major results. So this is our website that you can go to and look up those innovations. But most importantly, I hope coming out of this that some of the innovations here in the Department of Pediatrics, we can load them on so that everybody else can see those innovations as well. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.